Hello, this is George Kaywood from Handicapping.com. Welcome to this special podcast featuring Hall of Fame trainer Jack Van Berg. On Saturday, January 9th of this year, 2010, Jack was the featured guest at the Pick More Winners Handicapping Seminar Series hosted by Mike Crattville and Johnny Ray Gomez at Horseman's Park in Omaha, Nebraska. I arranged to record the session to preserve Jack's talk and present it for all horse racing fans to hear via podcasts on Handicapping.com. So special thanks to Horseman's Park. It's really one of the best simulcast facilities in the United States and features several days of live racing every summer that are fun and exciting. Be sure to take a look at their website. It's at www.horsemanspark.com. Horseman's is spelled H-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-S. It was really a homecoming for Jack, who is a Nebraska native. He held the record as leading trainer at Exarban Racetrack in Omaha for 19 years straight, from 1959 to 1977. An Eclipse Award winner for Outstanding Trainer, Jack was also the leading trainer by earnings in the United States in 1977 and became the first trainer to win 5,000 races in 1987. Jack is probably best known for training Alice Sheba, who won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness in 1987, and the Breeders' Cup Classic the next year. This is the first in a series of podcasts that came out of Jack's visit to Omaha. On this podcast, Jack talks about the state of racing in California, the nature of training and injuries to horses on synthetic tracks versus dirt tracks, those infamous earmuffs worn by Gate Dancer, and he also talks about his greatest horse claim. Let's get started now with Johnny Ray Gomez introducing Jack Van Berg at Horseman's Park.
Jack, let's start off with any opening remarks you want to have as far as the state of racing out in California.
Well, number one, they put in synthetic tracks, which is, I think, is the worst thing they've ever done to horse racing. It's just pitiful. I mean, I'm talking about from the handicapping, as far as the injuries to the horses, the soft tissue injuries, and when a horse gets hurt on that synthetic track, they go to the blue room. Trust me, I can tell you, it's pathetic what they do. They break their pelvis, they break their tibulas, and they do not slide. They just stick their feet in the ground. There's no slide, no give to it, and it's a bad thing. Of course, in California, our governor out there, and the governor before, has given the casinos to the Native Indian reservations exclusive, and the horse racing is going down the tube just like it did with our politicians here in Omaha. When we had a chance to get slot machines over here, and they didn't do it, let them go to Iowa and started Iowa going. I mean, it's pathetic, and racing in California is going the same direction. It's just the politicians are ruining it, and they can't see enough to see that what it brings to the economy, to the state, and the farmers for the grain and everything. They're just blind, as far as I'm concerned. And they're supposed to be representing the people of the state, and I don't know what they represent, I'll be honest with you. So, trust me, we'll be a lot better off, and they're going to take the synthetic tracks back out of California. I can tell you this now. When Santa Anita's over, they're going back to the old dirt, because they just did a survey the other day.
How do you train differently on synthetic versus dirt for your horses, or do you train the same as what you used to do on dirt?
I think on the synthetic, you maybe have to train them a little harder. They have to be a little bit fitter sometimes. You can train most of them without any high-end shoes. In fact, a lot of them are running them out there without any high-end shoes. But it sometimes, and when that stuff gets hot in the afternoon, the temperature on that track of that soil will be about 140 or 150 degrees. Like you have the weather, 85 or 90 degree weather, your track surface will be about 145 degrees. And, of course, that's the same way I say with these jockeys. It's going down, and we've had so many jockeys that's got paralyzed. I say they haven't done a study, but the vest that they make them wear, they have no roll. They can't roll when they hit. And I raced at Sportsman Park. My father raced there. All those years, every day somebody went down at that little bull ring. The turns were so sharp, and they might have got banged up and scratched up and skinned up and swelled up for a while, but they weren't paralyzed. But with these vests that they make these jockeys wear, I don't think they can bend. Dalhousie, McCarron, Big Guy, all of them will tell you that that's the worst thing they've ever done is put them vests on, because we've had so many paraplegics now that go down on these spells. So they just, trust me, they have people that make decisions that couldn't run a popcorn stand at the World Series, as far as I'm concerned. So,
what type of injuries do you see on synthetics that are different from what you used to see on the dirt, or are there really any differences?
Well, you'd have, I mean, when you talk about, you know, all these people talk about a horse breaking down. When a horse runs, they run on one leg at a time. So you're taking a 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 pound critter, and that leg is not as big around as your leg. You're going to have injuries because they make missteps, they bump, they do this. That's going to happen. But on this synthetic track, when they have an injury, they either snap the leg off or they snap their pelvis completely. It's just, and they're headed, the blue room is where they put them to sleep, and they're headed there. It's just on the dirt tracks, when you had an injury, you might have one bow, you might have one crack of cannon bone, you know, that you had to give them time off, but you could bring them back. But these things that ends their career when they get injured on these synthetic tracks, and they haven't give you the true study when they surveyed it of what happens, because they were just so thinking they were going to do everything. And they train on synthetic tracks in Europe, but they never raced on them over there. Everything was training on it, and they never raced on them. When you race on them things every day, and them horses, they just do not slide. They do not skid. It's like sticking their foot in a hole.
What are the differences between Hollywood and Santa Anita? It seems like the horses, because I think you're stable of Hollywood, right?
I stay at Hollywood for the barns. The barns are concrete, the best. Barn area for the help for the horses and everything that I've ever been in anywhere in the country. Dennis Moore is a track man. I think he's as good a track man as there is around. He didn't put the goop or the wax on last summer when they redid that thing. He tried to take it more to a dirt track back as much as he could. We've had less injuries there. But Santa Anita, what they did over there with that track, they rained the other day. They couldn't get any drainage. If we get the rains that they predict we're supposed to get this winter, Santa Anita, I think, will have to close, and they'll be over at Hollywood running the races because it did not drain with the little rain that we had.
You seem to have a much better success at Hollywood with most of your horses than at Santa Anita. Do you think it's because the tracks are fundamentally different, or because they've trained on the Hollywood so they're more used to that surface?
Well, the ones I got right now don't have too much success anywhere I go because I got some slow horses. But I've done very well at Santa Anita. I don't run as much as Santa Anita because that track has been such bad shape. And before they put the synthetic in, they rolled that track down when it was going to rain, and it was be like running your horse down a concrete road. So I just didn't, when they rolled down, I would not run my horses over because it's not worth tearing the horses up. I mean, to me, the horse comes first, and if you can't take care of your horse and protect him, then you shouldn't be training him. And they just run those horses over that track, rolled down even before they got the synthetic. It was pitiful if a rain comes, so I wouldn't run then.
We're going to have questions from the audience, and Gary has a microphone, so please raise your hand, and Gary will get to you.
Here we go.
Yeah, hi, Jack. I've been a fan of yours and your dad for 50 years in racing. How did the two great ones you had, Kate Dancer and Aldar, how did they do at the stud farm?
I begged the Scarboroughs when we never got to see the best of Ali Sheba. I mean, if he had raced as a five-year-old, he just did what he had to beat the horses, and that's all. I never had a horse like him. I worked him when he got ready for his four-year-old year to get him ready. I worked him a mile and three-eighths one day. I forgot the track at Hollywood Park was a mile and eighth, so I broke him off at the quarter pole thinking I was going a mile and three-eighths, and I worked him going a mile and a quarter, but the track being a mile and eighth made the work a mile and three-eighths. Worked three other horses with him. My dad always would hook a $2,500, $3,500 horse when it was a handicap horse, working the last half mile, and that cheap horse would always beat the handicap horse. I worked three horses with him that day, and he outrun all three of them. He was just so great. But no son of Ballydar, the best sire, a son of Ballydar, has been that horse in California Benchmark. But a lot of horses don't turn to. It was a great female, good broodmare sire. Secretariat, he didn't produce. No son of Ballydar reproduces like Sons of Stormcat, Sons of Bull Rooter. So actually, Gate Dancer was the best sire out of the two of them. And of course, he had the Bull Lee breeding back in his thing. But when I begged the Scarboroughs on, as Alashiba turned to be a 5-year-old to race, I said, you got to keep in mind that no son of Ballydar has been successful at stud. And Alashiba was not successful. He bred some good fillies, and his females are producing good runners. But as far as being dominant like Stormcat, Bull Rooter, and that, no. But Gate Dancer, between the two of them, would be the best sire.
How did you figure out the Ballydar or the Gate Dancer ear thing? And could you tell us that story? And had somebody done that before you did? Because it kind of looked like Batman on that.
He looks like Bugs Bunny when he had the mirror sticking up. But I bought horses down in Chile, and I've been to Chile, and I've been to Argentina. And down there, they had earmuffs on their horses. They race a lot of horses. If you'll see these races, I don't know whether they sometimes simulcast them South American races. They use those earmuffs down there for the simple reason that for the bugs. The bugs are so bad. So Dalhousie told me the Gate Dancer was listening to things. He said when he turns for home, he cocks his head up there and listens to the grandstand. So I thought, well, I had a lady that was making silk. She was making blinkers. She was very handy. And I said, would you make me a set of earmuffs with a sponge in it? Because when I was a kid, to put cotton in your ears, it was horrible, I thought. You know, sometimes when you have an earache, they want to stick cotton in your ears, and I thought that was terrible. So I see these guys that do it. The trotting horses, they put cotton in their ears. They have a string running clear back to the reins when they're driving them, and when they turn for home, they pull that cotton out of them horses' ears in the trotting horse business. But anyway, I didn't want it. So she made me a set of earmuffs for Gate Dancer. The foam rubber inside of the earmuff fit right into his ear. And I run him in the Derby without him, and then he come to the Preakness, and I had the earmuffs ready to go. Well, Dalhousie was too embarrassed when the truth came out. I didn't know at the time, but he was too embarrassed to ride him with the earmuffs. So when I called his agent, he said, I didn't get no answer. I got this damn reggae music on there, you know, some rock reggae music. We never could get there. So I called Cadero and I asked Angel, I said, would you ride this horse in the Preakness? And I said, I think we've helped him with these earmuffs. And so we did. And of course, he set a track record in the Preakness. He won the Preakness. And from then on, whenever you put those earmuffs on him in the paddock, he just dropped his head just like you'd put him to sleep. He loved them earmuffs. And that's where we got started. And I really do think that if you run every horse with earmuff, you'd be better off. And of course, I've lost so many sets of them because everybody comes by and borrows them, and they never bring them back. They just keep them, you know. So, but that's how we got started with it.
Yeah, Jack, you've had a lot of highlights in your career. What are your most fondest memories from Exarban? What are your highlights from Exarban?
I loved Exarban. I loved the fans there. It was a pleasure every year when I would be at Detroit or come from Hot Springs or anyway to get back home here. Probably when I brought Gate Dancer here and he won the Gold Cup and we brought him back next year, the following year and he won the Cornhusker. Those were great moments. I would have to say that was the best. He was a good horse. And Johnny Long didn't give that horse the best compliment. He told me one day in California, he always said, not just one day, he always told me, he said, Jack, if I was still riding races, that horse would never get beat. That horse was so good, but he just wanted to run the last little bit. That's all he needed to do. But it was just running in the stake races here, being around, and it was, we always, you know, if we win a stake race, we had a champagne at the barn after the races. My good friend Don Ladd, we'd come over there. He'd drink the hell out of that champagne until his wife came by, and then he'd be sober as a judge the minute she showed up. But those were the good days. I mean, it was like family with everybody, the fans. And And the days that I remembered about Exarban more than anything was when they had the barn area where people could drive through the whole barn area. They could come to the barn every Sunday morning after church was out. Our barn was full of horses. The people that bet on a horse, if they liked them, they'd always come by after church. And our barn was always full of fans to come to see their horse, or the horse that they'd want a little money on. Everybody else's barn, they'd be going through them. They had their favorite horses they liked to come see. I never, ever lost anything out of our barn as long as they was in the open like they were. Nobody stole anything. The minute they put everything up there behind the fence, I had a lot of stuff stolen out of the barn. So the good days was when the fans would come and drive through the barns, and I think that's the way racing should be today, where the fans can have entertainment and fun and be close to the horses.
Great, great. How about some more questions? There we go.
Yeah, Jack, I was thinking about you when I knew you were coming here, and I thought, well, here's a guy that had his heart probably dropped in that stretch in the Derby, and 1 minute later you were the winner. How did that feel?
Well, if you want to know the truth, I didn't see him stumble.
Oh, my God.
My wife's hat blew up in front of me. I was married back then, and she had a damn big hat on. And that hat blew, the wind went poof like that, and the hat blew just about the time he stumbled. So till I got to the museum, when they had the thing over at the museum, the party after the Derby, I never really did see him stumble. I seen the little dodge, but the hat blew up my face, and I didn't get to see it.
I think the Fleet Alex was probably worse than that one in the Preakness, don't you?
I don't know whether he was any worse. The worst place was in the Belmont when we were sideways at the head of the lane when Pinkai run him up gone west his rear with Klepper clearance, and he turned completely sideways. Completely sideways if you watch the Belmont.
Wow.
And he was completely sideways. That was even worse than the Derby. He stumbled so fast in the Derby that, you know, everybody said Chris McCarron did a great job of picking him back up. Well, he was down and up before McCarron knew what happened, I can tell you that. Yeah. It was the horse. That horse was so agile that he could stand on his front legs, he could stand on his hind legs and never lose his balance. He was just so agile. I never had one balanced like he could.
Yeah, but I want to know who got the hat, you or your ex-wife.
I was married twice. They're both good housekeepers. They kept the house.
We've got another question in the bag.
Jack, you were known as one of the greatest cleaning trainers of all time, and that's how most of your 5,000 plus wins relate back to claiming. And I remember one time back in my early days, you claimed a horse down at the fairgrounds for $2,500, and you ended up running them, I believe, in the Gold Cup. What was your greatest claim?
The horse that I got at the fairgrounds was a horse called Gray Bar.
That's
win the Gold Cup.
That's the one.
Okay, he was that horse was. I bought him. I bought him off a guy for $5,000. If he won $7,500, I had to give him another $2,500. He was a ridgeling. He had a testicle up inside of him. He'd run out of the gate about 100 yards, and it hurt him so bad he'd run over and pull up, and he got real bad at wheeling. So when I bought him, the veterinary came over that day and went up in him, standing right there in the shed row. We worked on him and took that out of there. And I brought him to Omaha here. The first time I run him was for $6,500 claim. If I was a real gambler, I should have bet my life on him. I worked him with a horse of Gary Thomas's that was running in allowance races, and he just galloped to him. I run him for $6,500, he won. I run him for $9,000, he won. I run him for $15,000, and he won. Then I run him in allowance race, and he got finished third, and they disqualified and moved him up to second. And then he came back and won the Gold Cup. That horse could really run. He ended up foundering at Detroit in the mud at Hazel Park as a four-year-old. Up there he foundered. Pardon?
That guy got his $2,500?
Yeah, he got his $2,500. And I'll tell you a little secret. The guy's name, I just come to my mind, his name was Copeland. He trained horses. And my good friend Frank Tipney, his brother Vincent's the one that wild again beat us in the Breeders' Cup. But Frank was a good friend of mine, a good fellow. He was at Chicago. And when I run him in the Gold Cup and he won, he run into Copeland on Sunday morning at Arlington Park. And they're talking. Eddie Copeland says, I can't believe it. Jack's supposed to be a good horseman. And he bought that horse off of Bill Peckham. He said, I can't believe Jack would be so stupid to buy that horse off of him. And Frank says to him, you don't think he was? He just won the Gold Cup, beat Bastard Derby and My Juliet yesterday in Omaha, the 100,000. He said, I don't think he's too stupid. Frank called me on the phone. He said, Copeland didn't even know he did that. So, but that was a fast horse, very agile horse.
On the next podcast in this series, Jack Van Berg talks about drugs in racing, offers some personal remembrances, and talks about the management of owners as well as horses. Be sure to tell your racing friends about Handicapping.com's free podcasts. This podcast was made possible with the permission of Horseman's Park, Omaha, Nebraska, www.horsemanspark.com. Copyright 2010 by Handicapping.com. All rights reserved.